All right, so the first question is, you started your career as a successful stage actor on and off Broadway. Was it a conscious decision to actually move into film, or was it more natural?
It was not a conscious decision, although I was doing Grease. I had just been nominated for the Tony, and I have a sort of a memory of thinking, well, maybe it's time to, you know, explore other mediums, but it was pure happenstance that Norman Lear's casting director had seen Grease and thought I might be right for Bea Arthur's daughter in Maude. They had already done the pilot, and they needed to replace the actress who had done the role in the pilot. And so Norman came to New York and interviewed me, but the character had been established as having a 7-year-old son. And when Norman met me, he said, well, you know, I'm sure you're a great actress, but you don't look old enough to play this part. Okay, thank you, goodbye. And about a month later, I got a call. They wanted me back in LA to audition for the role because they hadn't been able to find what they wanted. And so I hadn't really been looking, but Norman brought me to LA and I started doing Maude, and I've been there ever since.
I actually didn't know that. That's interesting, because I guess the part of Gloria was also recast with All in the Family. So you're working on a show such as Maude, and it has such a strong female lead character, iconic character. And the show itself though won't really work, despite how good that character is, if the other supporting players can't stand up to her. So how did you kind of see your role in that?
Well, I think that's why they hired me. It took me a while to understand that's why they hired me, because I really didn't understand acting for television at all, you know? But I think they saw in me someone who could stand up to Bea, whose comedy delivery was not like Bea's. I think that had been maybe one of the problems with the other actress that they replaced was a marvelous actress, but she was very similar in her delivery, I think. A little more New York, maybe, if you want to say that. And yet, who could maybe be a little softer or bring a different element to it. And they seemed to think that that's what I could do, and so that's why they hired me. But yes, it was... It needed to be somebody who was strong, but not as strong, or strong in a different way, maybe.
Okay. And, was it 7 seasons the show lasted?
Six seasons.
So you get this early in your career. You're on this great show, great writing. I love that show. So from there, is it frustrating to try and find roles that are that good when you receive such high quality work early in your career? How do you kind of approach that as an actress?
It wasn't frustrating at that time, mm-hmm. because what I was being offered was of like quality. It wasn't, let me back up. I never read another sitcom after that that I thought was as funny, you know, for years after that. And I wasn't interested in doing sitcoms after that because... for that fact, because I had been involved in something where the writing was so superlative, you know. But I found, as Maude was winding down and I wanted to do other things, it took a while because Hollywood has a tendency to typecast. And in their eyes, I was a comedienne. I was a sitcom actress. It took a couple of tries to turn that around and make somebody see me for a dramatic role. I think I did a part on a Quincy where I played a rape crisis counselor who had been raped, and that was the first really dramatic thing I had done. That sort of, oh, okay, she can do that too. And then there were a lot of TV movies and everything, and then I got a call from a man who was represented to me by my agents as being a hot new film director. You know, he hadn't done television at all, but he was really an up-and-coming film director, and he had a role that he thought I might be interested in, and That was John Carpenter, and that was yes.
Yeah.
I hadn't at the time, but I went in and met John, and he was doing his first studio film. It was for television, but it was his first union film, and that was called High Rise at that time. With Lauren Hutton and David Burney, and he actually said to me, you know, he would have loved to have had me do the Lauren Hutton role because he had seen me in Maude and he felt that I was someone who portrayed the kinds of characters that he liked to write, the Howard Hawksian woman, you know. But Lauren was at the height of her career at that time, and as the networks are wont to do, you know, that was a different name, and so... So he offered me the other lead, and that's how I met John. And then, as you probably know, we had a romantic relationship, and he wrote The Fog and wrote the role of Stevie Wayne for me, and that was my first feature. Had it not been for John, because in those days, that was before Johnny Travolta did, made his transition from the Warthogs to Saturday Night Fever. If you did TV in 1978, you couldn't get seen as a feature actor. They just wouldn't audition you because the prevailing thought was nobody's going to pay to see someone that they can see for free in their living room every night. So John gave me my first feature role. And then I think possibly because I was associated with John socially, and because my first feature was a horror film, suddenly then I was a horror actor, you know. So, I mean, I've worn many hats. But probably because my beginnings were on stage, I was able to continue to break out and do different things.
Sorry, do you want the next question? Because I have a follow-up.
Okay, well, ask your follow-up.
Just, you say you were a horror actress then, so you did work in a lot of genre movies then, kind of in the early 80s.
In the early 80s,
and,
yes. I did
to this
do
day,
Cannonball Run and
yeah,
Back to School
Run.
And some other things,
yeah,
but people remember
Ronnie Dangerfield's wife.
The
yes.
genre stuff.
Yes, that's a bit of a difficult wife, weren't you?
Yes.
But another great movie.
Well, the precursor to Creepshow, or maybe that Creepshow came first. I'm not sure. Billy was also a difficult wife.
That's right. But so you're a genre actor then, and I think a lot of fans, you still have this strong fan base for those genre movies. I'm just wondering, when you look back now, what do you think it says about the quality of those movies, that this is how you're perceived so many years later? I think it speaks to the just the excellent work that was done in those films.
I agree. It speaks to the quality of those movies. It also speaks to the genre in terms of the fan base. Because this fan base, I mean, I can't think of another genre where people are still watching movies once a week sometimes that they've been watching since 1980. And so I think it's a combination of those two things. But yeah, I mean, the fact that, you know, The Fog, I mean, people come up to me all the time and say, that's my favorite film, I just watched it last night. Or Swamp Thing, or Creepshow, or Escape from New York.
If
you know?
I may say Swamp Thing, I was 9 years old when I went to a friend's birthday party and saw it, and there was a scene in there that changed my life, and I'd like to say thank you. I think you know what I'm
was
talking
about.
Was
that the scene about. That got cut?
Yes,
eventually,
I think
it was
know
never
what
I'm supposed to
about.
Appear.
Thank you so much. That was wonderful.
Yeah. That was the European version.
That's what we got here in Canada.
That's right.
Well. Please, Bert.
So, are there any projects that you went into where you were unsure of how it was going to turn out, but it actually did turn out better than you expected?
I just did a film, a short film. It won the Comic-Con 2009 Sci-Fi Best Thriller Horror Film. And the only reason I think of this film, it's called Alice Jacobs is Dead, is that I took it because I really liked the writing. I really liked the character. And the director, young director, Alex Horowitz, who'd only done one other short, But he sent me the short when he was making the offer, and I thought I saw some real talent there. So I took it, not thinking too much of, I mean, thinking I wanted to do this role, and I thought I was in good hands with the director, but not really thinking, oh, this is going to be, you know, a wonderful film or a great film or anything. It was a four-day shoot, and, you know, and it has, he did such a fantastic job with it that it's winning awards all over the country. It'll never be seen in the theaters because it's only 20 minutes long, you know.
What's
it's
the role in this film?
The film itself is, I guess you would say, a post-apocalyptic zombie love story. But for me, it was an allegory for anyone who is dealing with Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or, you know, a terminal illness that is rendering their life unlivable in the time before they pass. The actual story is it's several years after the zombie apocalypse. A doctor played by John Lazar from Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, or Valley of the Dolls, I'm not sure which. Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, I believe.
I think so, yeah.
Was responsible for discovering a cure for the virus, for the zombie virus. It's the beginning of the turnaround. There are some people who are coming back. The zombies have, for the most part, been eliminated. But his wife was infected, and he has been keeping her unzombie-like, as a prisoner in their home, continuing to work to try and find a vaccination that will cure her. She knows that she's turning. She hasn't turned, but she knows that she's turning, and she is at one point begs him that when the time comes, he will kill her, you know, because she doesn't want to live like this anymore. She's living, you know, in much the same way that I have seen several of my relatives who have had Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and, you know, aren't in the world anymore, but don't have the release of passing. And so that's what attracted me to it. But he did a fantastic, that's a long answer to that's one that I didn't really think about, you know, this is going to be fantastic, but it turned out to be so much more than I anticipated. I have had others where I've taken them knowing there was no chance, but, you know, they were shooting in Greece, or they were shooting in Moscow, or they were, you know, there was some reason I needed to do it. I needed to put a tent over my house to get rid of the termites, and they were going to pay me, so you know, we take things for different reasons. The one that you might find surprising that when I read the original script, I really thought could be another Star Wars. I mean, I really thought this could be a fantastic, commercial, wonderful, delightful film, was Swamp Thing. And then when we made it and I saw it, I was disturbed because it had not to do with Wes. Wes did a fantastic job, but they pulled the money out from under him, and he had to make such changes. And it was, you know, he just had to shoot it. Oh, it was a nightmare. It was a nightmare shoot. I talk about it in my memoir. There are worse things I could do, you know. showing up on the set and the makeup trailer is gone because they hadn't paid the bills and things like that. When I first saw his first cut, I thought, oh my gosh, you know, this is, how can I even tell people to come and see this? Because it's not what I thought it was going to be. And then he was able to make some changes, and then, you know, Ebert and Siskel discovered it, and suddenly it was, and I thought, well, what do I know? don't come to me. Listen, I saw the screening, I saw an advanced screening of a movie. While we were shooting Swamp Thing, they had an advanced screening of a film that they said they thought was going to be a huge blockbuster. And I went to see it and I thought, God, I don't get this at all. And it was Raiders of the Lost Ark. So I'm not the one to ask, you know.
Well, I'd like to mention again, I'm glad you made Swamp Thing.
And many people are, and so am I. I am really glad now. I mean, that's one that's going to go on the tombstone, I'm sure. You know, that's the one people remember.
Well, it's interesting because you bring up those roles, and so I'm also kind of interested in, with your history, what actually draws you to a role now?
It's the writing. I guess it's always the right. It's always the words. And I'm gonna even precede that by saying, it's the grammar and the spelling on the page, because, you know, I'll get a script, and if I'm reading the first five pages and this author or the playwright or screenwriter can't be bothered to even send it through spell check or edit, you know, you'd be astonished. Oh, my God.
I can't believe that.
You know, like, this sentence doesn't even make sense. Where's the periods? Where's the capitals? Who's spelled, you know? Then I immediately am turned off. But it's always the writing. I mean, I had the privilege of being on Carnival on HBO for 2 years, and I thought that was, well, it goes back to Maude, I guess. I mean, you know. So I'm first attracted to the writing of the whole piece. Then the next thing I look at is the character that they're asking me to either play or audition for or whatever. And I guess I'm looking at, is this something I connect with? Do I understand this? Do I hear this in my head? You know, I mean, even something like The Convent, which was a, you know, low budget, very funny horror film, where the guy basically wrote the role for me. And I started reading, I thought, oh, this is okay. And then I got to my role. Well, I'm playing Kurt Russell, I'm playing Snake Plissken, you know, on a motorcycle with an M16. And it came right at the time in my career where I said to my husband, well, you know what, I'm getting too old. I don't think anybody's going to offer me an action film again or anything like this. And here was this sort of funny, outrageous character, and I just responded to it. So, and then I look at the director and the director's background and his talent and his body of work, and then I go from there. Then it's okay, where's it shooting? And the last thing for me usually is, you know, how much are they going to pay? Because that's not why I work. I mean, it's why I have worked at some points in my life, but if I don't have to worry about that, that's not high on my list.
Do you get many people that actually do write roles for you?
I don't know if Alex wrote this Alice Jacobs with me in mind. I do get, yes, I mean, I get stuff sent to me where they've written it for me, or even where they've written me, you know. They've written Adrienne Barbeau as a character. Occasionally. I can't think of one I've done besides The Convent. Let's see. There are some times when I have an inquiry from a director who says, are you interested? I read it, and then he takes it back and he will tailor it a little bit. You know, oh, okay, well, now that I know you're doing it, I can make her a little stronger or a little this or a little that. Carnival, actually, the original casting, they were looking for a wizened, I think she was, I guess they said anywhere between 50 and 70, but the description was, you know, you sort of saw an old wizened, I remember that was the word they used, were a woman. I don't even know if she was written as a snake dancer in the original audition. But once they cast me, then they sort of took it, you know, they added the sexuality and the romance with the young man and all of that. And I just finished doing 9 months on General Hospital. And, you know, they asked me to come in just for 4 weeks and just do a little piece. And once they had me there and it seemed to be going well, then they made me a killer, you know? They made me, so sometimes it happens like that, where once they know they've got you, then they'll write for you.
That's great. I'm gonna ask about, did you have any more questions before?
Yeah, it seems like the daytime soaps are becoming a thing of the past quickly here now.
They are, yes they are. It's all budgetary. You know, they're not, it's just much cheaper to do a reality show, and the audience isn't quite there like it used to be. So, and it's a shame. There were a lot of people really disappointed.
A lot of people who got their start as well in that genre. It's a good training ground for a lot of young actors and a good place for a lot of actors to be rediscovered as well. So kind of a shame that way.
Yeah, I just finished working with Daniel Benzali, really you know, in a soap from Murder One. And
I wanted to ask you actually about the music album that you released in the late 90s. And just, is that something you wish had been able to, you know, come earlier? Or have you, is there more that you intend to do with that?
You know, once I started writing, and I just had my third book published, the music sort of went by the wayside. That the album came out of, at that time, I was doing a club act. I was touring the country and doing a club act. And I think I was just pregnant with the twins. And so I just, you know, someone said, you ought to do an album of the material you're doing in your club act. So, you know, and I recorded some of it while I was pregnant. And then right after they were born, I started writing, I guess. I can't remember the sequence of events, but I don't know that I'll go back to the music. It's, of all of the things that I do, it, because I didn't, I started out in musical comedy, but I'm not a musical comedy singer, I'm not attracted to musical comedy music. I don't have an image as I really like country and folk, you know, and like, not hard rock, but I don't, you know. But I don't have an image that way, so people don't expect to hear that from me. And so even putting together an act that would satisfy an audience who are coming to see Maude's Daughter or Stevie Wayne or, you know, why is she singing that? It's... If I were starting all over again, as a teenager, then maybe that's the direction I would go. But I think that's the end of it. That I shouldn't say that because somebody will turn around and offer me. I mean, if somebody offered me Mama and Fiddler on the Roof, I'd be there in a shot, you know. But I think the writing has sort of replaced that.
I guess we shouldn't take any more of your time.
That's
maybe,
right.
Maybe people want to see you, but you're lovely and so beautiful. And thank you very, very much for the interview.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks.
We appreciate it a lot.